Welcome to Bridging the Gap. We are Alaskans discussing issues that divide us in order to find solutions that will unite us. Welcome to Bridging the Gap. Today is the 39th in a series of panel discussions of Alaskans examining issues that divide us politically in these turbulent times. My name is Paul Thomas. I live in Trapper Creek. The objective of the panel discussion is to derive, through questions posed to the participants, an understanding of the causes that have resulted in the current polarization of American political discourse. Subsequent to achieving a satisfactory understanding of the causes, it is hoped that through further discussion, a strategy for positive interaction can be constructed, which can achieve a respectful combination of each side towards the other. Today, we are going to be talking about the Green New Deal. And with us, we have first-timer Seal Smith. And joining the back-to-back club is Kate Graber. She was here last time, and she's here today. And coming back again for, I think it's your third time, Sam.
I think so.
Samantha Finkenbinder. So the Green New Deal is our topic today. It is my understanding that the resolution introduced to Congress outlining the Green New Deal has no specific programs for which funding is allocated. It is basically pointing out a direction this country needs to take in order to do its part in fighting climate change. If that's all it is, why has it become so controversial so quickly? Seal, you read the thing. You read the whole resolution.
I have it right here.
Well, you don't have to read it to us. The question is, why has it become so controversial so quickly?
Well, after reading this resolution, it's pretty clear to me that it challenges the status quo in a way we haven't seen in 100 years. And that's why we see such an uproar, because it essentially will transform our economy and our energy systems 100% to 100% renewable. So, of course, places like Alaska, oil and gas states are going to feel threatened by that.
Those industries are threatened, so therefore the controversy or the political will to stop it. Is that your view of it, Kate?
And I think once something goes in writing, whether it has funding or not, it feels threatening to people who see it, that it might change the source of their livelihoods.
Like the oil and gas executives.
That's where I was going, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, this is an excellent tactic in cynicism. I mean, all we have to do is dredge up this kind of cynical nature that is driving partisan politics right now, and the Green New Deal just feeds that flame so thoroughly. It's a great tactic if you're a hardcore conservative right now.
And what's interesting to me is that much of the discussion, I think people don't actually haven't read the thing. Because I was surprised.
I think you're the only one in this room that's read it. So.
Possibly.
Yeah.
And there
I'll
are a lot of things in here. I would make the stretch to say this is a very nonpartisan initiative, because there are a lot of things in here that we heard President Trump talk about in his campaign. Specify the nuts
what
and bolts. There
did
are
Trump
of,
say in his campaign that would coincide with this document?
He talked about providing clean water to everybody.
Okay,
clean water is,
right.
is a big part of this.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
He talked about stopping the outflow of jobs, and this is also part of the Green New Deal, is ensuring jobs for all Americans and stopping the flow of export of jobs. Those are just a couple of things that were really prevalent in Trump's campaign.
President Obama was the driving force behind the Paris Climate Agreement, which President Trump withdrew from as one of his first acts as president. First thing, get out of that Paris Climate Accord. Subsequent to the Paris Agreement, the next step took place last December in Poland at Katowice Conference, where actual rules for reducing emissions were agreed to. Everybody remember that? Familiar with that? In Poland, it occurred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big international conference. Rules were written. Russia, Saudi Arabia, and the United States did not agree to abide by these new rules. Regardless of this, the other nations are plunging ahead. Is this alliance of us, Russia, and Saudi Arabia the last champions of an energy industry doomed to obsolescence, or do they still have enough economic and political power to keep carbon emissions running at full bore?
I just want to go, wow. I think that they're being delusional. I think about the way the world is going, whether they want it to go that way or not. And they're just not going to be on the front line for right now.
I think we agree that they represent the interests we spoke of in the first question.
Mm-hmm.
The energy, oil industry, natural gas, as it's currently constructed. But the question is, do they really, those three countries who are going against this, do they have enough power, political power, to prevent this climate change initiative that a lot of us are experiencing or looking at?
I would say no. And the reason for that is the economics of energy are shifting really rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
You see wind, solar, and storage technologies are now cheaper than all fossil fuels in many parts of the world.
And more jobs being created in the...
Right, yeah. And I think, let's see, the last 3 years now, more than 50% of all new energy capacity has been renewable.
Mm-hmm.
So the economics alone, while I think their policies are pushing back and slowing things down, certainly there was a curtailment of growth in solar energy here in the States because of Trump's policies, but it wasn't enough to stop it. It slowed it down maybe, 10-12%.
So Kate says they're delusional, so you think that they're being delusional about economics, and once they see the reality of the economics, it's inevitable.
Well, I think it's worrisome the friends we're keeping.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I mean, that's a worrisome threesome right there. It still just really stuns me that's who we're aligning our economy and our fiscal future with Russia and Saudi Arabia.
And our secret meetings,
and
our intelligence.
I may be alone in this, but, when Obama was president, I think the U.S. had a lot more influence out there. And to me, from what I, read in the paper and see out there and everything, it seems like the present president doesn't have that influence. And so teaming, and I don't think Putin does either worldwide. And
if you look at the Iran nuclear deal, we pulled out of that mm-hmm. after it was negotiated with like 10 other countries. The other nine stayed in, mm-hmm. we were the only ones that pulled out of that deal.
Yeah, and I actually think that pulling out of the Paris Agreement really removed the U.S. as a player in the big picture.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it did, too. I think that, at this point in time, nationalism seems to be what Trump is about.
And you don't have a voice if you don't have a seat at the table.
Exactly.
We can't add our...
Well, the voice that we expressed there in Poland was showing the wonderful aspects of coal fired. Pence was over there, and they did a demonstration on how coal was working so well. Mm-hmm. And that fell over like a lead balloon. The science warning the public about climate change has been articulating this fact for over half a century. But government action regarding this warning has pretty much resulted in policy that is accelerating America's contribution to carbon emissions. I don't know if we're number one or China's number one as far as carbon emissions. And that is until now. What is the biggest factor you see in the emergence of the resolution known as the Green New Deal? Is it, in your mind, the 2018 congressional election as a whole, this new freshman class, or the realization by the American people that the science is true and the threat is real, or something else? What do you think has caused this? And I just heard on the radio today an uproar from the kids in school.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the Fridays for our future.
Fridays for the future. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's actually going to be my last question because after I got out, I parked the car, I wrote it down because I want to make sure we talked about that today.
The little girl, I think she's getting a Nobel. She's up for a Nobel Peace Prize. She hasn't.
Greta.
The one who started.
What country is she from?
Sweden.
Okay. Yeah, she started that over in Europe. And
I think I heard her on the radio today, and she just was like, "We are not stopping here. You are, you know, you're going to listen to us." Mm-hmm.
But to get to your question, I don't think you can separate those three things. I think they're all happening at the same time. We saw, you know, big surge in the election, putting new progressives in the House especially. And at the same time, the end of 2018, the IPCC report came out and the fourth National Climate Assessment came out. And they agree on this, the point that we have essentially 10 to 12 years to radically shift our energy emissions to avoid absolute calamity. Mm-hmm. So,
well, we're
so those
seeing
things
signs.
Are converging.
There's plenty of evidence of calamity on our doorstep.
Oh, right. Did you read the article in the paper about the three men in Nome who had to be rescued off the ice because it is unprecedented that in March you would have ice so soft in Nome that, and they lost $10,000 worth of equipment out there and everything. The ice was so soft it broke up and literally became floes. And the guy ended up on one of the men ended up on one the size of a VW bug.
As I understand, he was jumping floes for hours.
Yes, 2 to 3 hours he was out there.
Right, it's quite scary. I run the Alaska Climate Action Network, and we have members all over the state. And we're starting now to get like photographs. People are posting photographs from their front yards, absolutely no ice in a lot of the North Slope communities.
What I'd like to see a photograph of is the North Pole taken from a satellite in 1960 or whenever we started throwing satellites in the sky, and the North Pole now. I'd like to see that comparison of those two photographs.
You can do that or just look at time-lapse photos of the Mendenhall Glacier. Look how much
or any of them, or Exit Glacier, or any of the glaciers and everything.
It's stunning.
And those photos are available.
I was going to say, you don't even have to go back to 1960. I think you would be stunned to see the difference between 1980 and now.
Mm-hmm. Things are accelerating.
Yes.
To get to your question, I agree with Syl. Absolutely, it is all three things that's pushing the excitement about the New Deal. I don't think anybody knew it would go quite as viral as it went, as quickly as it did. I think even some of the freshman class said, we thought it would take about a year to drum up support for the New Deal, and here it's just all over the place. But I think there's something more. I think it's this back-of-the-head ideal that, you know what, and please understand, personally, I believe in climate change, but there's a lot of people who do question it because it is so apocalyptic sounding. It's so, wow, this is going to happen, like crazy, right? So I think there's pushback. But there's also this common sense idea of why not? Why not go to renewable energy? Why are we still stuck burning the same old, and releasing this? And it's not clean and it's not quiet. Why not do better?
I walk outside my house and I smell the wood burning, and I'm thinking, if I'm smelling this, it can't be good for my lungs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But whatever it is, you can.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's also a lot of latent, sort of built up desire by Americans across the board for better opportunities, for, you know, better pay, different new training for new jobs. You know, there are a lot of people who are working three jobs and can't make ends meet. So Green New Deal guarantees, you know, livable wage. So it goes beyond just addressing climate change. It addresses a lot of the inequalities that have really arisen since the 70s.
Well, the aim is to have that. But I think there's got to be a big change in the way our income inequality issues are resolved before we're really going to be sure, because I don't trust anybody as far as, you know, providing jobs. If I can provide somebody a job at minimum wage, part-time, no benefits, as opposed to somebody who's full-time and I got to pay a lot more money for, that's just the nature of corporate America. So are we really that sure that this document coming out of Congress here, the broad outline, is going to be a guarantee that these jobs are going to be so sustaining for our livelihood.
Well, as they say, the devil's in the details.
Mm-hmm. And we don't there's not a lot of details, right? We
don't have it's an aspiration.
It's a non-binding resolution. It's equivalent to writing something on a napkin and pushing it over to the next guy, you know, as far as Congress is concerned.
Well, maybe. I mean, I think it's a visionary document. Mm-hmm. It lays out a big vision, and with the intention they'll, you know, create this special committee that will hammer out the details. And that's where it'll get interesting, because lots of, you know, interests are going to come into this, and there'll be a lot of play to actually determine the final outcome.
Right. Well, the specific legislation has to have words exactly put together that is going to, you know, allocate funds or make restrictions that people can no longer do things, and or, you know, whatever they're going to do with the carbon tax. Carbon tax credits that could be traded or whatever.
Right.
I never really did understand all that, but Kate, you're pretty quiet over there.
I was thinking about, you know, that saying, "Its time has come," and I think a lot of things are driven by changing demographics. You know, we have the young people coming in, we have the older people, you know, dropping out.
I was just thinking on my way in today that whenever I was a kid, and I was a young adult teenager going into adulthood, we had the Vietnam War on our hands. And it was really us. And I feel that my generation took credit for stopping that craziness, that insane. There were over 2 million Vietnamese killed in that conflict. And now I think I'm just a stupid old man and has just been walking around enjoying the fruits of the middle, being in the middle class as I was going into my elder age. And it's the young kids. It's the future for Friday that, again, are telling us.
That's a great connection, because it just like your body was on the line with the Vietnam War.
I had a student deferment, so I was able to avoid that.
Oh, did you? Okay. Yeah. Well, I remember my neighbor coming, you know, back from Nam, and he was physically affected. And I think the young people today feel like their lives, their bodies, their whole, you know, security is.
Kate, I interrupted you before you finished your thought. I'm sorry.
Oh no, it's all right. I'm sitting here. I'm supposed to be a speaker here, and I'm sitting here listening and fascinated. I was thinking about when I was I think I was 8 years old or even younger, the first time I encountered a place that was totally garbaged out. It was littered like you wouldn't believe. We were camping and everything, and it was an unofficial campground, and we cleaned it up. And I've been cleaning up things ever since. And, you know, me as an individual, that's not going to stop. You know, me cleaning up litter isn't going to stop climate change and everything. But it's about improving the world, you know, and everything. And I've never got over that. I keep telling myself I can retire from that. You know, I'm over 60.
But you don't you dare retire from that.
No,
because
what
you're doing is you're creating a culture. You're creating a culture.
I'm just as passionate now, and I've lived in Alaska since 71, since I was 15 and a half years old, and I've watched the glaciers melt. I've seen the climate change to such a degree that, you know, it was really easy to retire here 5 years ago.
Yeah. You know? Alaska's changed so much.
It has, you know, and stunning. I think about, you know, I like to golf, which isn't very climate, you know, earth-friendly, but I do like to golf and everything. And I've been down on the golf course since we moved back to Palmer in the last 5 years. And I've actually golfed as early as March and as late as December on the golf course since we moved back here in the last 5 years.
There's a lot more destructive things than golfing to the environment.
Well, I know, you know, corporations. But what I'm saying is the climate change is so drastic. And I was living in Kenai in between living here the two times and everything. And even down there watching, you know, friends' houses literally fall off the bluffs because of the erosion from the high waves that they never experienced before and everything. And
you know, something you said too about cleaning up, because the Green New Deal, one thing I really love about it is it's not just about carbon. It's about restoring the planet, about restoring ecosystems. And Alaska, I think, has a unique role to play because we have so many public lands and a lot of carbon sequestration potential and, you know, also boosting the agriculture in the valley so that we're more food self-sufficient and, you know, upgrading Eklutna. You know, we could have thousands of new jobs in the valley with these initiatives. But it goes beyond, because I've always viewed climate change as a symptom of a bigger ecological issue. And the Green New Deal does that. They nest it. So
we're bridging the gap here at KVRF Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. We're talking about the Green New Deal with Syl Smith, Kate Graber, and Samantha Finkenbinder. Last show, I gave the panel a multiple choice question on which of a number of issues was the most national dire emergency. Remember that, Kate?
Yes, I do. Okay.
The unanimous, enthusiastic consensus was climate change. Uh-huh. It is hard to ignore the evidence we see from our own observations, but is that the consensus feeling that is strong enough among the regular voters to elect officials willing to actively produce policy that will fight climate change? Okay, we had three panelists here a couple weeks ago. That's the number one issue. We've been talking about how many people are really engaged, but what about the regular voter? I mean, we need to elect officials that are saying the things that we're saying here today. Mm-hmm. We haven't done that so far. If you look at our state-led delegation in Juneau, as well as the three people we sent to Washington.
I was going to say,
go ahead.
It's interesting. You know, it's basically, we talk about climate change and everything. What adds to climate change, the specifics, details, and everything that directly affect people in their neighborhoods? Last September, October, I got involved with my neighbors because they were going to put an asphalt plant not too far away from us. And, you know, the health issues caused by asphalt plants are documented. We even found an expert on it to testify for us and everything. But my neighborhood is full of a lot of people, conservatives and everything. But, boy, I'll tell you what, they got on board really fast. And I'm talking about 295 households.
Well, yeah. When you start talking about carcinogenics in the air, that tends to get people on board.
Yeah, but that's still local. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about something that's truly global here now.
Exactly. But don't you think that as they experienced, I mean, there were some people that surprised me that they got on board and were in everything. But don't you think that as individuals experience things like that, they become just a little bit more woke up?
Well, sure, it goes from not in my backyard to, you know what, I don't want it in your backyard either.
Exactly.
Well, and the other thing there is that most of the polls show that the vast majority of Americans are concerned about climate and they want action on it. Even the recent poll right after the resolution was introduced, majority of Republicans support the Green New Deal. And that goes against what we hear in the media. But if you look at the facts of it.
I'm looking at the elections.
Well, I know what you're saying. Yeah. Yes, and I agree. Is the voter being spoken to here talking about climate change and how do we get the people
elected? Is the voter's belief resulting in a vote that will help?
I think we need to touch their pocketbooks. We need to do it talking about climate.
Well, the other problem I see, the candidates that are running, there's a disjunct between, I mean, we saw this in 2020 where we see a lot of new progressives coming in who really are addressing the people's needs versus corporate needs. And we often see candidates who are bought and paid for by the corporations. And there's that's the disjunct. So I think opening up the democratic process, getting rid of some of the corruption in the system, gerrymandering, these kinds of things.
Lobbying.
Citizens United.
That's my next question. Any suggestions on a strategy to turn this around?
Yes.
The people seem to want to address climate change as a real issue, a real danger. Mm-hmm. The people are the voters, yet we are not voting. So you heard a little bit about gerrymandering and that kind of stuff. And
start talking about climate change as a job creator. start talking about how much new infrastructure is going to need to be built. If we're going to move away from fossil fuels, by God, I better be able to use my toaster in the morning. Mm-hmm. So what am I going to do? Where am I getting the juice, right? Mm-hmm. If my power plant isn't burning crude, what is it doing? Is it solar? Is it, it's not going to be wind. It'll be solar or geothermal.
I like water. Everybody's against the Sioux River Dam.
Geothermal is wonderful, too.
Well, we've actually done a lot of work on pumped hydro energy storage mm-hmm. and looking at upgrading Eklutna, which the problem with the grid is you can't put a lot of renewables on until you have storage. Mm-hmm. So pumped hydro storage is very – it's the cheapest of all possible storage options.
Now, how does that work?
Look into concentrated.
It's basically you have a series of reservoirs, and when you have excess wind and solar during the day or whenever, then it uses that energy to pump water up to the reservoir. Mm-hmm. And then when the wind dies down or demand goes up, you let the water down. So it's basically
which
a big storage
and,
battery.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, which turns the bidirectional turbines. So have the technology.
Yeah. That's like concentrated solar works somewhat similarly. It's a tower that's heated by the panels, and then the water internally boils, and the boiling of the water turns the turbines, and it produces power.
Right. Yeah. Power towers.
Okay, steam thing. All right, let's talk about the first New Deal. 4 years into the worst depression in American history, President Roosevelt worked with Congress to produce legislation whose environmental legacy is unmatched by any stretch. In addition to the national park infrastructure and flood control projects, the New Deal produced hydroelectric power and the Rural Electrification Administration, which transformed America by providing cheap, carbon-neutral electric power to a huge chunk of America. I tried to put together a list of all the hydro dams built during the New Deal, and I have poor internet research skills, so I just came up with a list of some of the biggies. The Bonneville Dam on the Missouri River. Anybody ever drive by that dam on the Missouri River? It's giant. The Grand Coulee Dam in the Columbia.
I actually toured the dam, mm-hmm. yes.
That's another very big one because the Columbia is a big river. The Hoover Dam on the Colorado River.
I was just there.
Okay. You're our dam lady.
I am a dam lady, and you know my brother has a dam job.
Hey, that's a great
Is there hydroelectric power produced from his dam job?
Yes.
Cool.
We could advertise that. We'll get you all a dam job.
There are 16 additional hydroelectric dams that were built by the Tennessee Valley Authority. And 11 in the first year. And all those dams that I just named are generating massive kilowatts of electric power, carbon-free electric power, for over 8 decades. They are all New Deal programs. Every one of these programs, these dams, came out of the New Deal. Given the severity of our current climate change crisis, isn't the original New Deal a logical model?
I have to say this. This just falls into what I was thinking earlier today. I was thinking, you know what? We need to have something like that now. And all of a sudden, I could hear somebody going, and how are we going to fund it? And I was thinking, tax the rich. We could do it. Tax the rich. We could have we could become a leader in the world. If we did something like that, if we mm-hmm. could do something like we did back in the 30s, why couldn't we embrace this and go forward? We would create jobs and they would be livable wages and tax the rich.
It could infuse, it could really transform. I mean, we could restore our economic health, essentially. I mean, I think it's a brilliant idea. It's like you said earlier, it is an idea for the times. It addresses so many needs that have been unmet for so long.
And it was all initiated by government spending.
It was. That's how I said, where was the funding going to come from? You know, and some people may think they're one of the rich I'm talking about. I'm talking about the rich. You know, I'm not talking about the person.
The 1%.
I'm talking, we could even go 5%.
percent.
You know, it's still not going to affect that many people.
You know, I think we could transform this country with a program, several programs like that and everything, and it would transform our world.
Now, one thing I want to address, this version, the Green New Deal, isn't necessarily going to mean we're going to go build a bunch of hydroelectric plants. We already have those. And I know that's a big concern in Alaska because we've got competition with salmon resources. So, you know, I don't see that scenario happening here as far as more big hydro. But the energy piece,
we could
yes.
have this argument later on.
We could.
I worked as a temp for Fish and Game on the Sioux Hydro Project back in the, I'm trying to remember, what was it, it must have been the early 80s and everything. And, you know, all of their studies, and if you go, and to back up their studies, if you go down, the salmon populations in Columbia River were damaged by the dam.
All right, I'm only going to say this once, okay?
Oh, okay, go ahead.
The Grand Coulee Dam had these ladders that the salmon were supposed to jump over. I saw pictures of them in grade school. There were salmon jumping over these ladders. I couldn't imagine anybody having any energy left after you had to jump over those ladders. However, if you start well below the dam and you take your little skid steer and you build a creek all the way to way above the dam, you're going to give these salmon a chance to get upstream from the dam.
You're talking about building a man-made tributary or
yeah,
a braid.
Or another right. creek mm-hmm. that goes alongside it, you know.
An aqueduct?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, there's also, call it that.
You could reverse that. There's Run a River where you create that diversion. That's where you generate the energy and the river stays free. So there's a lot. I mean, we could debate this forever.
Exactly. Yes.
And we probably will at some point.
Of these Talkeetnites out there that are just so environmentally conscious and are so against the dam. And I'm thinking, where are you getting your electricity? You're either burning at your generator because you're off the grid, or you're using the coal-fired generator that is the way that Alaska has produces. And so that's not so environmentally friendly for me.
I think the New Deal was successful when it was because people were hurting so bad. Their pocketbook was hurting.
Yes.
They were starving.
Yes.
There were soup lines. You had people who went, there was no middle class left. You had the uber wealthy and you had the poor. You know, and that's kind of what you had. And
so we're not there?
No. Well, I think we are there in a lot of ways.
I think our middle class is certainly reducing.
Yeah.
And I, you know, we could even get into talking about the 70% tax margin and maybe school some people on how tax brackets work so they wouldn't be so frightened of that. They'll be frightened anyway. But I gotta say, the one thing that I don't love about the Green New Deal is I feel like it's trying to attack too many things at once. And, of course, it is just a resolution. It's just a non-binding resolution. This is not legislation.
Right.
I don't like that they've thrown in a basic income clause in there, an idea. I don't like that they've thrown – I want that to be separate. Let's focus on climate. That right there is climate change and jobs rolled into one. You can't have one without the other. You know, you've got – we've got to start building this kind of infrastructure. You're going to have to train people on how to use, you know, DC versus AC.
So would you be okay if you were, whenever they did actually get the legislations put together, if one piece of legislation addressed the climate change issue?
Specifically.
And how about another piece of legislation that says that there has to be like a minimum wage or something that addresses the economic justice aspect of it?
Yeah.
And you'd still be okay with that. But you're upset because they're together in this resolution?
I think it washes out each one instead of giving these very important ideas their own platform.
Well, I think in practical terms, it will be separate legislation,
okay.
And there'll be battles over each big piece. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason, part of the reason they're including these more social justice issues is because they were not addressed the first time around, and there were, you know, huge swaths of our society that have been left out of economic growth scenarios. And
the bottom line is that if you have a job and you take your paycheck home and that paycheck isn't enough to pay your bills, that's unworkable.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but go ahead.
Oh, it's okay. What was I going to say? Let's see.
About
frontline communities. The resolution can several times they go back and address frontline communities, the impacted communities, the ones in the coast, the Gulf Coast, who are really suffering from the impacts of climate change, and so they very clearly make those communities priority communities because they're being affected the most. Mm-hmm. And I find that to be a really good thing. Mm-hmm. And here in Alaska, especially when we've got, multiple communities that are struggling just to keep their head above water.
I'm going to be the cynic here. I'm going to play the cynic, not be the cynic. But I was going to say, one reason, why they add in all the extra stuff is so that they've got some things to take out when it comes down to more than a resolution.
You say you're cynic. I think you're a realist.
Cynic. I said that to somebody once. The other thought here is, so we've got these Gulf Coast places which have much more conservative politicians down there, and maybe throwing them in will get their politicians on board. So it's kind of a carrot, a lure there and everything. So I'm being realistic.
Yeah, I think you are. And I really do believe that if you want to bring in the conservatives and you want to bring in the Republicans who disagree with it, start talking about how much money this is going to make the economy.
Right, jobs.
Start talking about it. All the infrastructure
growth
that needs to be built.
They'd have to get other buddies, though. The buddies they have in the oil industry aren't going to be the same buddies that they'll have to get to in the renewable industry.
Fine.
That's my cynicism coming out.
Yeah.
Realism.
Yeah. Well, unless you see, BP actually stands for Beyond Petroleum.
Yeah.
If they actually live up to their name, they'll transform themselves.
Yeah. I was somewhat surprised when talking about the effect the New Deal had on 1930s America that there is a negative perception about the New Deal. And that came from my phone conversation with you, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Learned by how the history of the New Deal was taught in school. That wasn't my experience as a grade school student in the 1960s. We thought, we were taught that the New Deal basically saved America. We didn't say we weren't taught it was saved socialism, saved America from capitalism. We weren't taught that, but we were basically taught that the New Deal came at a time when the Great Depression was going to put us under. How are you taught about the effect of the New Deal on our country? We're going to give everybody a chance. Go back to when you were taught about the New Deal, when you learned about it, whether it was high school or grade school or college or whenever. Would you say that the way it was taught had a positive effect in your mind about the New Deal or negative?
For me, very positive.
Okay.
And I remember especially that there were, I think it was Arlo Guthrie was one of the musicians that was contracted. There were all kinds of really cool art projects and historical documents.
You're talking about Woody Guthrie, his dad.
I mean, not Arlo, right. It would have been
Arlo
Woody.
Arlo was his son, yeah.
So that's,
Woody.
I think, that was one of the associations I have, is all these great creative.
A lot of art.
Yeah.
A lot of artists were employed by the WPA.
And the National Park System, and seeing those projects that are still, you can go out, walk out and see them. So I have always had a very positive.
And I think.
The CCC. That's the
CCC,
one.
Yeah. WPA.
Mm-hmm. I was sitting here trying to remember when I didn't know about it, because I was so fortunate to be around my grandparents who actually lived through the Great Depression and everything. I mean, they were actually adults during it.
And they had to raise their families during that.
They had
my
to
grandmother was
raise their families, and they were a little bit more fortunate than some people, but not all the family members were, and they talked about it and everything. So I never heard anything negative about it. They were kind of, even the most stuck in the mud of my grandparents was excited about all the new things, the highways. I mean, people are thinking it's just dams and art and things like that, but it was new highways and bridges. And I mean, there was so much I mean, America really came into its own under that system and everything. And so there was always a lot of enthusiasm. I really don't remember learning about it in school, which doesn't mean I wasn't taught about it, but I'd already been, you know, kind of versed in it by family members and everything who were there.
Experienced it.
Yeah,
my grandpa was a foreman that built a road between Sweetown and St. Boniface and in our neck of the woods through the CCC.
Okay.
All right, Sam. Now you tell us how you were taught.
Well, you in the textbook, of course, you get the whole rundown, FDR and the New Deal. You take it home, and growing up in Alaska, you know, very red state, what did I start hearing? I started hearing from people, oh, but don't you know that the New Deal began the ghetto situation? That's where ghettos really got going because of all of the cheap housing and all of this, and it brought in that kind of thing. And what was the other one?
I thought the Depression created the ghettos.
Don't you know that socialism created
the ghetto
situation?
The 10 cities were all
and a lot of it was that socialism push. And, I mean, this is the same generation of people who thought Social Security was socialism.
I just want to
Wait, Social Security is socialism.
Right, but they fought it to the nail. And they're the same people now who say, don't take away my Social Security.
Sam, I just wanted to just one thing. You said, and you know what, I was raised in a red state. Well, you know, here's the funny part. I got up here in 71. I was 15 and a half years old. And it was a very blue state, not only prior to my arrival, but it stayed blue for quite a while. So, you know, it's all perspective.
My husband grew up here in Palmer, and he talks about how everything changed with oil and gas coming
in.
And you've got a lot of conservatives moved up and changed the politics. So it hasn't
So that's when
been.
It turned around.
That's when it turned around was in the 80s.
Yeah.
If you look at Alaska's constitution, there is no more socialist document of any other state constitution.
Oh, don't say that out loud.
I'm saying it to everybody.
It's an ownership.
It is about the people having control of natural resources.
It's an ownership state.
Who else but the people?
Jay Hammond came up with the PFD.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure Jay Hammond would be a Republican in this day and age.
No, I don't think Jay Hammond would
probably
be.
Probably not. Everything shifted suddenly.
No. I met him a few times. He was definitely somebody who loved
Jay
people.
And my dad wrote letters, but they were pen pals. Bella's an absolutely lovely woman.
She is.
I love Bella. And no, I can't. Those folks, to me, typify Alaska and what Alaska was and still should be.
And and when we were all neighbors. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, we were all neighbors here. Yeah. We cared about each other a lot more than we did politics.
And the land.
And the land. Very we deeply. Loved the land. And that's one thing I don't hear up here. It kind of makes me sad with some... and maybe it's I'm hanging around with the wrong people. I don't know. But back when I first came up here and in the decades following, we loved the land. We loved the beauty of Alaska. We wanted to preserve it. The majority of people here did. Mm-hmm. And you just don't hear that. I'm hanging with the wrong people or something.
One of the things that disturbed me, I've only been up here 10 years now, it was the junking up of the yards.
That's always been there.
That's okay. That's
it's a blue tarp district.
All right. We agree.
You have to understand, it's if you look at it this way, things were very hard to get up here and everything. So people would save things in their yards. Mm-hmm. And now there are people who are doing it just as an excuse of, Alaskans have always done this. But that's not really true. It started because things were hard to get.
Shipping cost.
Yeah, the shipping costs
Amazon.
Were outrageous. And so people would collect things, you know, in their yards and everything. And now some people have taken it to a whole new low.
We're bridging the gap on KVRF Big Cabbage Radio, Radio Free Palmer. We're talking about the Green New Deal with Seal Smith, Kate Graber, and Sam Finkenbinder. Can we agree that the debate on the issue of climate change and the Green New Deal has representation by each major political party? The Democrats supporting the argument that climate change is a scientific reality caused by energy policies which promote the use of fossil fuels, leading to a dangerous environmental result, and the Republicans, whose denial of the science and the danger has policies that are actually increasing the amount of carbon being poured into the atmosphere. Can we agree that each ideology that I just described, the one with climate change and the deniers of climate change, are represented by the Democrats on one side and the Republicans on another? Or am I being oversimplistic in that analysis?
I think you're being oversimplistic. I think that there are some folks on the other side that actually do believe in climate change. I have
what
heard
other
it
side
out of their
is that,
lips.
Kate?
The Republican side,
okay.
The data shows, the polls that have been done show that the majority of it's a nonpartisan issue. The majority of Republicans agree that climate change is changing and that we need to do something about it. I think it's up to 73%
okay,
now.
Okay, those are polls. What about votes in Congress and in the Senate?
We have representatives that are bought and sold by specific industries that have an interest in maintaining fossil fuel predominance. So there's a disjunct there between the people and the representatives.
I imagine that if a politician in Alaska ran on climate change and you can keep your guns, they'd win.
Well, it's interesting. They had the vote in the State House last week on ANWR. Only 5 state representatives in the Senate and House voted no. And they all spoke about climate change. And that really, indicates...
Voted no. What do you mean? They voted not to open up ANWR or voted
no,
to open up ANWR?
They voted against the resolution, and the resolution was in favor of drilling ANWR. Mm-hmm. So there were only 5 that actually disagreed with drilling in ANWR.
Okay. So what's that say about what your analysis is then?
Mine?
Both of you. Because I think it's pretty clear.
I'm with Paul on
that
this.
That the
one.
Democrats Green New Deal, and the Republicans are against the Green New Deal.
I mean, it's very generalized.
And even though you have these, even though you have these polls that I agree with the polls, 70-80% believe that climate change is a real danger to us and the rest of the planet, that the Republicans are the ones that are fighting it tooth and nail.
Well, I want to maintain that our elected officials don't represent the will of the people.
Okay.
Oh, there we go. I agree with you there. In fact, I saw something rather interesting the other day on that.
But can't you see the party alignments here? Or are you ignoring the party alignments?
No, I'm not. But I'm not willing to buy into that because the conversations we have, mm-hmm. because people are acknowledging climate change is real. It doesn't, not along party lines. And
that's the voters, though. We're talking about the people that got voted for.
Right, and those are the people that have the money to run the campaign.
Yes.
There's a whole bunch of things that go into...
And you're right. Special mm-hmm. interest groups are feeding that, that politician money.
Okay,
and they're gonna vote
when
they vote.
When Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was up there with, who's that guy from Massachusetts, Markey, the Senator Markey, and they announced the Green New Deal, mm-hmm. there on the podium, there were half... dozens of people behind him. Mm-hmm. How many Republicans were there that day? I'll tell you. Yeah. That's how many. 0.
Well, and I still maintain, it still holds that our elected officials don't represent the will of the people.
I agree with her about that. I do agree with her about that.
Which is unfortunate. We elect them. But once they're in there, apparently they don't hold to the will of the people. They hold to the will of the people with the moolah to hold their attention.
We elect some of them. Sure. Other people elect others of them.
Exactly.
Yeah. I just can't.
And yet it's the people electing them.
It is the people electing them.
And I think this is, if we continue to promote the Green New Deal, I think one of the points, especially in Alaska, that we need to keep going back to is this: really, climate change is not a partisan issue. It affects everybody.
We all live here.
We all do, and we are all affected. And, there are many things in here that, as I pointed out earlier, that Trump was campaigning on.
Yeah, but they're nice words, aren't they? Pretty words. Everybody should have clean water. But then when you get down to the nuts and bolts of how to get clean water to every community, mm-hmm. the conservatives and Republican Party, they really do push against that because it does go against the big business policies that created the Republican government mm-hmm. as we know it today. Mm-hmm. This is not the party of Lincoln. They love to say that, but it's not. There was a huge shift change in the 1960s of what the Republican Party was.
And we've seen a lot of people leave the Republican Party, and they're kind of at large now. You know, the Independent Party has just exploded. The majority of Americans now are independent.
Right. So if we're saying that 70% of the Republicans are in favor of taking action against climate change, 80%, or am I not saying that's not, Mike doesn't think that that's a
Well, I'm saying 73% of all Americans.
And oh, okay,
so,
I see.
Yeah, sorry, okay. I didn't mean to mislead right. there. But a, you know, a good chunk of those are
they believe in climate change.
Republican, or I would even say former Republican independent now.
Okay, well, we didn't know if we're going to all adhere to that one there. The primary method of argument I'm seeing from the Republican side, this is probably just me and Sam because you two don't agree, is to avoid the debate on the science and concentrate on name-calling.
Ad hominem attacks for the win.
But sorry, I do agree there's a lot of that name-calling going on over that, that they are focusing on the name-calling and not on the science. I agree with you there.
Okay, in Trapper Creek, the phrase I hear the most is tree-hugger.
I've been called a tree-hugger all of my, ever since the term came out, I've
probably
been a
have a room full of tree-huggers in here.
Dirt-worshipping.
I don't know. I have a wood stove.
Ooh, dirt worshiping.
You know,
I never heard that.
I just have a bumper sticker.
Don't hide in shame over that. You know, I was thinking about I was thinking about how people live, and you know, they encourage us to you know lessen our carbon footprints and everything else. And you know, I'm right there with everybody, but you know, we can only do so much. You know, and still, I mean, because it's time-consuming sometimes, and it's life-changing at other times, and we're not as much of the problem as the corporate out there that is with the big emissions. And we need to, you know, as members of a co-op, encourage greener energy, which honestly, I think that a lot of the REAs that I'm familiar with here in Alaska have actually been doing that.
Okay, REA, what's that?
Rural Electric Association, okay. Matanuska Electric, Homer Electric, they're both, and I'm
familiar.
And Chugach Electric, they're REAs.
Member owned.
Okay. And everything.
Well, and here's where I put my plug in. My husband is running for the MEA board on the Clean Energy Slate.
Oh.
So we are seeing a lot of, most of the customers, they say when they have their annual meeting, that's what everybody talks about. They want more clean energy.
And my husband's a former employee of both Homer Electric and Matanuska Electric Association. You know, I think that, you know, they have been not, he hasn't worked for them for, you know, over 5 years and everything. He's been retired. But I think that, you know, I've been watching Involved for a long time, and they have actually been moving in that direction towards greener energy production and everything, and encouraging it in their members, which most people don't even realize they're a member. It's a member-owned co-op.
Yes, and they very socialistic,
vote.
By the way.
Yeah, member very socialistic. Yes. REA, you said REA earlier.
Right. The Rural Electrification Administration.
Yes,
right.
It is part of that. It is part of the New Deal back in the day and everything, you know, although Matanuska Electric didn't exist, I don't think.
Hey, we have about a minute left, but I wanted to get to the last point in the discussion we have today about the impact of more than a few female freshmen, I'm going to use the term fresh women, representatives. We have Ayanna Pressley, Katie Hill, of course AOC, Ilhan Omar, Katie Porter, Rashida Tlaib. They all have shown an unwillingness to be satisfied with the status quo. We have an all-female panel here today. So what do you think, ladies? Does this new fresh women class, they a significant factor in what we're talking about?
Of course.
Absolutely. The future is female.
It's representative.
There you go.
It's representative of what's happening to our country culturally and socially. And
politically now, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful to see it that way. Mm-hmm. After all, we do vote for these people.
Okay. I want to thank you all for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Kate, lovely conversation.
Yes, I appreciate it. And all you out there, listeners in Radio Land, thanks for listening. Bye now.
Thanks for listening to Bridging the Gap. We welcome diversified perspectives. If you are interested in becoming a panelist for a future show, send us an email to manager@radiofreepalmer.org.
This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters.